Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I'm John Batson with Jonathan Schanzer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, looking at the Ring of Fire strategy that Tehran boasts about in order to crush Israel. Hamas to the south, Hezbollah to the north. And we return to a headline from London in these last hours. A senior commander of Hezbollah's elite Radwan commando unit was assassinated in an Israeli airstrike on Monday, within these last hours, according to the IDF confirming this. Ali Ahmed Hassin, the Radwan forces commander in the Hajir region, killed in southern Lebanon along with two Hezbollah members under his command. Radwan is the one that's been firing the anti-tank missiles, the harassing fire along the northern border. Radwan is a commando unit. At the same time, there are thousands of Hezbollah who are said to be ready to attack Israel. Jonathan, the last time we talked, the question came up, I believe it was right after the Sahidi strike in Damascus. Why hasn't Hezbollah moved? And as I recall, the explanation is because Iran is saving it for another punch the day and if Israel and the United States take on the real enemy, which is Tehran. Here we are, a week later, Hezbollah has not moved. Hamas is, at this point, frozen in place. So I don't want to go to just Beirut. I want to go on to Tehran. Is it true, Jonathan, the way I've learned it these many months, that Tehran is making all of the decisions? There's no local commander in charge of anything. That everything here is mapped out in Tehran, and Zahidi was the action commander at the front. He's now dead. He must be replaced. And yet Hamas won't move. Hezbollah won't move. Al-Aqsa won't move. Houthis won't move without Tehran's guidance. Is that true, Jonathan?
That is our understanding, that these are all proxies that are answering to the regime in Tehran. They've all been funded, trained, armed, indoctrinated by the regime in Iran, which makes them tools of the regime. And the regime is obviously still threatening to strike back directly after the Israelis took out one of their senior IRGC commanders on the battlefield in Damascus. I'm not sure that they're going to respond directly. It's far more effective for them to use their proxies. They continue to fight Israel to the last Yemeni, the last Iraqi, the last Syrian or Lebanese or Palestinian. This is, of course, this has been their strategy. This is their ring of fire strategy. Arm these groups with as many rockets and drones and other weapons as they possibly can get to them. The smuggling is the dangerous part for the regime. But after that, the fighting takes place somewhere far from the borders of Tehran. And that is the way they like it. They will continue to use this leverage for as long as they can. And that, of course, does raise questions about what the Israelis should be doing in return. They have a strategy that they've articulated in the past, which they call their octopus strategy, which is that Israel should not be tangling with the tentacles of the regime, all of these different proxy groups, but rather that they should be firing back at the regime itself, the head of the octopus, if you will. And this is something that has yet to be seen in terms of a cohesive strategy from the Israelis. It's my contention that if Israel would like to get this whole thing over with, they're going to need to convince the regime in Tehran that a fight of this magnitude is not worth it, that they will pay a severe price for engaging in these proxy battles. That has yet to be conveyed to the regime, not by the Israelis, certainly not by the United States. But that, I think, is a message that at some point the Israelis are going to have no choice but to convey. And it will be interesting to watch.
I understand the White House is tied up in the election plans, and that explains a deal of their mitigation about Hamas. it does go somewhat to explain the mitigation about Tehran. But you have written most recently, giving me another point of view, about how Europe regards Tehran's actions. You've written that Germany is standing by Israel, an important player no matter what the war is, but for this one especially, given the history of Germany and the Jews. So does Germany understand this is a war with Iran? Does the European Union, does NATO, that this is not about Israel and Hamas, this is about Tehran taking on the United States?
Well, I think Germany certainly does, and Germany understands how important this is for Israel to have allies that stand with it in the battle against Hamas and the battle against Iran. The other European states perhaps don't feel the same guilt or the same sense of responsibility to defend the Jewish state. And so I think Germany is going to likely stand out. Well, there'll be some other Eastern European countries as well that are fiercely pro-Israel. But, you know, we're certainly seeing, I think, in countries like France or Spain, where they're much more equivocal. And I think this is likely to be the case moving forward, that we will see a divided Europe, but one that is still anchored by support for Israel coming out of Germany.
Your remarks about Germany made me think, what is the future here? We talk about that all the time with the Ukraine war. We don't talk about it in terms of Iran's attack on Israel. What is the vision in Washington? What is the vision in NATO about how to deal with Tehran going after the conflict zones end, after Israel goes back to normal conditions of watch on the watchtowers, but not in active combat? Is Tehran to remain a threat like Russia for the balance of the century? Is there a plan, Jonathan?
There is no plan, I think, right now. The plan has been to appease the regime and to hope that it doesn't go nuclear. I think that is still the plan right now. And I do believe that the Europeans are worried about it, but I don't believe that they're willing to take action. For that, they are going to look to the United States and the U.S., at least right now under the current administration, does not have the will, dare I say, the spine, to stand up to the regime in Iran. So that does not portend well for at least the next 10 months, whether that changes with a different administration or perhaps even with the same administration with fewer pressures politically, we'll have to wait and see.
Tehran, it does not have the strength and depth that Russia has, that China has, certainly not. In fact, it's very much a regime and a military and a secret police, but it does not have the minorities with it. We know this because we study Iran. Does that make a difference to Washington, that we're not dealing with a monolith here? We're dealing with terrorists.
No, it should make a difference to folks here in Washington, but it does not seem to have gotten through here, that this is a regime that is weak. It does not have a particularly strong army. They have the ability to wage war by proxy and through terrorists, but they don't have the capabilities that would normally be foreboding to the U.S. There are weaknesses that we see within the regime, some of the minorities that you mentioned, whether they be Kurds or Zoroastrian or Sunni. There are people that hate this regime, and that is probably their ultimate weakness. And the fact that we have not exploited this is, I think, a black eye for U.S. policy. It's a black eye for the international community as well. This is a regime that partners with the Chinese. It partners with the Russians. They are no friends of the U.S., and we continue to tiptoe around them for fear when I don't believe that fear should be warranted. We have the advantage. We simply don't use it.
Jonathan Shanzer is Senior Vice President for Research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited, no purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right Rug.